動でお風呂を沸かします。お風呂の栓は来ましたか？自動でお風呂を沸かします。
Hello and welcome to another episode of No Such Thing as a Fish, a weekly podcast coming to you from the QI offices in Hoburn. My name is Dan Schreiber. I'm sitting here with Anna Tashinsky, James Harkin, and Alex Bell. And once again, we have gathered around the microphones with our four favorite facts from the last 7 days, and in no particular order, here we go. Starting with fact number one, that is my fact. My fact this week is that the original voice of Porky Pig got fired for having a stutter.
That is so unfair.
It really is, isn't it? Because they carried on with the stutter.
That thing, did they then do auditions for people being like, you have to stutter?
Well, they didn't really need to do auditions because they had the great Mel Blanc, who is the finest voice of all time, who eventually took over the role. But the whole vocal styling of Porky Pig was created by a guy called Joe Doherty. He's a guy who died 1978. He existed in like the early 1900s because Porky Pig was one of the original Looney Tunes, if not the oldest.
The oldest continuous one.
Exactly. And so he did it for 2 years, but the issue was it was really messing up recording times because he couldn't control his stutter. He'd get
nervous.
Wait,
so had they decided to give Porky Pig a stutter and then deliberately chosen him, or was it like vice versa?
The first one.
Yeah. They decided to give him a stutter and then said, okay, we'll pick a guy with a stutter.
So the guy who invented him was Fritz Frelinghuis. And he said that he wanted someone with a stutter because it would distinguish him from other characters. Now, have you heard the original one?
Ben? I have, yeah.
It's like the new Porky Pig is like a fake stutter, but the first one is just like a person with a stutter, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's a very different voice.
They decided they didn't like the kind of stutter, so they were like, we're going in a different direction.
No, it just was too late. It was taking too long. He just couldn't get through the words.
Yeah. It just took way too long.
That's really sad. It's a bit like firing someone for having a disability and then hiring somebody to pretend to have that disability.
In a way, it wouldn't happen today.
You'd hope.
You would hope not, yeah.
So Porky first appeared in a movie, short animation called I Haven't Got a Hat. So that was 1935. So he was there for the 2 years.
Of course, easier to write cartoons back then, wasn't it? What a laugh that sounds like. I haven't got a hat.
It was kind of, he wasn't the main character. He never was meant to be a main character. Mm. It was like a production, a musical production, where they had a stage at school and everyone was getting out of their seats and Porky was really nervous. So he's stuttering his way through the song. But before Mel Blanc, who I said took over and is the voice that we all know and love, there was one in-between guy who was called Count Cutelli. And Count Cutelli...
He sounds like he is a Looney Tunes character.
He does, doesn't he?
Did he go on to do Sesame Street?
Yeah. Count Tino Cutelli. This guy was known as the Big Noise. Like, he had 2,000... He had 2,000 sound effects to his name. He was sought after by everyone.
Like
that
guy from Police Academy.
Yeah, exactly. Michael Winslow, yeah. And when he died, the Berlin Anthropological Institute offered $2,000 to his family to purchase his head and throat so that they could study it after death.
No. Hang on, did they remove his head?
That's what they requested. For $2,000, can you lob his head off with his neck, which is quite a rare request, I would say.
I feel like you probably get half the neck, usually. The middle of the neck, don't you?
The middle of the neck.
The whole neck is quite... So would you have to cut it like a V-neck jumper or something to get the full thing?
Did they accede to this request?
They did not, no. They did not want to hand over the head or neck.
Just fork out for the full body. If you want it that much, just on the $3,000.
Yeah, make it sound less weird.
But also, somebody ends up with sort of just like the shoulders. Oh, it's really weird to have a headless body.
Yeah, who wants the lower half?
I suppose they probably weren't giving away the rest of it. They're probably burying that bit. But
Yeah.
I mean, people did used to get different parts of their body buried in different places, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
It used to be a relatively common thing.
But still, I think the full head off, they seem to often take bits of the inside of the body off, or the
like
odd finger.
Like the heart or something that, right?
Yeah. Einstein's brain was than a normal brain was why they wanted it, right? Yeah.
Yeah, the guy who invented head, shoulders, knees and toes, he's buried in 4 different places.
Where are his eyes, ears, mouth and nose?
Actually, speaking of being buried, do you know what's on Mel Blanc's grave?
Oh, it's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah. That's all, folks.
Do the voice. Please do the voice.
That's all, folks. No, I can't do it.
That's all. I can't do it either. But you've got to do the stutter.
That was good.
Yeah.
But do you know why it's on his grave?
Because he died.
Because he played Porky Pig and he died.
That's a good guess.
And that's all refers to his lifespan.
Yeah.
And folks refers to the people who are reading the gravestone.
Yeah.
So you understand the meaning of the phrase. Great.
I feel like we're missing something massive, though, right?
Well, it was also his last words. The reason that his son decided to put it on the grave, because a lot of people say it was in his will, but I believe it's actually that he was filming a commercial for Buick Automobiles, and in that commercial they got him to say "that's all, folks," as you would if you had Mel Blanc doing a commercial, and they were his last words that he did to camera.
He dropped dead right then.
Well, he didn't drop dead. He collapsed.
Oh, okay.
So they were his last words.
Did they do the music like da 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 da?
Yeah, they did. It was quite insensitive, actually. His family sued afterwards.
I don't think that counts as last words.
What do you mean?
Well, they're pre-written. They're not.
But they were the last words he ever said.
I know, but yeah, it's like just
I know that is quite. I think that counts.
No, but it would have been great if that was his final words.
Just by chance.
I'm at home, you know, I'm dying on my bed.
Yeah.
I'm going to go out with the Porky Pig
line. My catchphrase, yeah.
Well, I think that he probably did decide that because he actually lived for another few weeks, but he didn't say anything else.
Come on, are you kidding?
If I was him, I would go, excuse me, can I have a glass of water? That's all, folks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Make sure you keep getting it in. Like, he's wasted the last few weeks of life just not talking to anyone.
Guys,
imagine the amount of quality time you could have had with his family. All the things that were left unsaid because he didn't want to...
All right, guys. Quite often, people don't speak for weeks before they die, do they? Because they're in hospital, unable to speak.
Okay,
but fine. I do like to think that he was lying there faking a coma just so that he could make sure. Anyway, his son was like, well, they were his last words. I'll put them on his gravestone.
I saw an interview with his son, and he said that the Porky Pig voice that he did was not a stutter. Hmm. He said that basically Mel Blanc once went to visit a pig farm to get into character, to see what Porky Pig would be like, and he saw the pig grunting in kind of a stuttering way, and his Porky Pig voice was copying the pig's grunt. It wasn't like a human stutter.
It definitely doesn't sound like any stammer or stutter I've ever heard.
It also doesn't sound like any pig I've ever heard.
No,
it's closer to the stutter than it is the pig, I would say.
Quite pretentious things where they're like, yeah, I spent like 2 weeks like studying pigs in order for my role as a cartoon pig. It's like, you didn't need to do that, mate. Like, it's a stupid cartoon. No one takes it that seriously.
Wow. Yeah. They did take it quite seriously, didn't they? I mean, they won Oscars, not necessarily for Porky Pig, but for these cartoons.
Did you read about the famous blooper reel of Porky Pig?
No.
So this was 1938, and this was put together on purpose because you can't have bloopers in cartoons.
It's like at the end of Toy Story 2.
Exactly, where they do all that. Yeah, so back in 1938, they already were doing this. And so it's a video of Porky where he smacks his thumb with a hammer, he goes in pain, and he says, oh, son of a gun. Which was the stuttering trick of Porky Pig. He would always not finish the word and put a new word in. But then he turns to the camera and says directly to the viewers, ha ha, you thought I was going to say this is a son of a bitch.
And he does
say it. And yeah.
That's why,
because at the end of the show, his catchphrase, he says, the, because he's trying to say the end. And then he says, that's all, folks, instead of the end.
I did not know that.
I think that's what it is.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
yeah, that sounds like it. Yeah. How interesting.
And then they made that in 1938, but it didn't get shown until the 90s, didn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Because you couldn't show it in
1938. What, the word bitch?
Well, no, you couldn't say bitch in 1938 because, like, obviously, frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn was 39, wasn't it? So, yeah.
But and it was a corporate thing, so they were doing it as a behind the scenes, as a package of bloopers. They just put that in as a joke.
And then when they had the 50th anniversary of Warner Brothers, that's when it came out with a load of other bloopers.
So how annoyed do you think they would have been, the animators at the time, when some dickhead said, look, we're going to make this blooper thing. It's going to take you about 2 weeks of meticulous drawing, and it's not to be released ever. Just a funny little in-joke for nobody.
But I feel like around that time, during that sort of golden age of animation, and like during all the Disney Studios things, loads of incredible workmanship went into stuff like that was just for like internal use, or they would put details in designs of stuff that like no one would ever notice, just because they had, frankly, the money and the time, but also the passion and the craftsmanship, and like they were really into what they did.
Yeah.
Which is quite nice.
Do you guys know how Porky Pig got his name?
No.
It seems like it's because he was a pig, and then pigs produce pork, doesn't it? I don't like to do the old back at you.
Do they produce pork, like milk, or are they pork?
Technically pork.
That is obviously part of the story.
Was it the result of sort of 6 months brainstorming at a pig farm by the writers of an immersive?
It's again from Fritz Freeling, who created him. And when he grew up, there were two brothers who grew up in his neighborhood. One was called Porky, and the other one was called Piggy.
Oh. No.
Yeah, because they were overweight children, so they were kind of bullied with these names, and then he took the names and used them for his character.
Really?
Yeah. That's so weird that the most piggy name for a pig actually came from people.
Yeah?
Yeah. Because like, I would just think if you're like porky and pig, it's like pork and pig, the two piggiest words. Yeah.
Like Hannah says, it is a very obvious thing to call a piggy character.
We think it's obvious now, but you know, at the time, it's mind-blowingly imaginative.
Sorry, who is the name of the count that you said?
Count Cutelli.
Yeah, that guy.
It's C-U-T-E.
It's kind of appropriate that he's Italian because the origin of Porky Pig, he was based on or inspired by a staple character from like traditional Italian comedy, the Commedia dell'arte.
Was it?
Yeah, so like during from between like the 16th to 18th centuries, there was this traditional theatre comedy and it used all of these staple comedy characters.
Like the Harlequin.
The Harlequin was one, which is the servant. And yeah, Porky Pig is based on the Tartaglia, which is Italian for stutterer. And it's a far-sighted, dainty character with a stutter.
Really?
Do you know who hated Porky Pig's stutter? Mm.
The Warner Brothers
Daffy Duck. Yosemite Sam. Roadrunner.
Porky Pig himself.
Oh,
yeah. So there was an episode where he hears himself on a playback of an old tune of Old MacDonald Had a Farm, and he hates the stutter so much that he smashes both the record and the playback machine. And I read this in an academic paper, which is called The Clinical Study of Porky Pig Cartoons. And it's by Gerald F. Johnson. And basically, this was a paper that was trying to show, did it have a positive or negative influence to have a character that had a stutter like Porky Pig? Mm-hmm. Because Porky Pig had jobs such as a farmer, a gas station attendant.
A farmer? That's a bit dark.
It is. Yeah.
Well, maybe it was arable.
All right, okay.
Yeah. He was a railroad engineer, a pilot, a private in the French Foreign Legion, a newscaster. So he sort of makes the point that any kids that were watching it could see that they could do multiple jobs.
Well, this suggests me that he can't hold down a job.
Yeah. That's true.
A worrying CV.
Yeah.
Do you know, I was just looking up treatments for stutters throughout history, and in the 19th century there were obviously shed loads of quacks suggesting you kind of like cut your tongue in half, or you slit that bit under the bottom of your tongue, or you shrink your tongue by having it cut to you know, lots of stuff which never works, so you're amazed how long it lasted. But one of the leading quacks slash doctors who promoted stuttering cures was this guy who went around Europe and actually was really important in developing like welfare systems in Europe, because he went to the governments of places like the Netherlands and Prussia and Belgium and said, I want to implement my stuttering cure, which he'd actually bought from a woman called Widow Lee. But anyway, his name was Mr. Malbouche, which means bad mouth.
Wow.
Dun, dun, dun. Thought that was quite cool.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It's interesting that 80% of adults who stutter are male. Way more men stutter than women. And apparently they've done some like studies and brain scans, and the way that your speech patterns work is just different between men and women when you stutter.
Really?
It's weird. I don't think it's fully understood, but
there was a theory in the early 20th century that eating too many vegetables caused stuttering, vegetarianism. And there was a psychologist called Knight Dunlap who also founded the Journal of Psychology. So he wasn't a proper quack, but he thought that if someone stuttered, maybe you should give them a diet of meat and that would cure them.
Eat porky
pork?
Pig. Yeah. So when was that, sorry?
That was early 20th century.
Okay, so like during the war, you had to really get the amount of carrots you ate right for like good eyesight, but not bad speech.
Oh yeah, that's true. And also, speaking of Mel Blanc, he never ate carrots, did he?
Did he not?
No.
There's a famous thing, like there's a thing online that he was allergic to carrots, which we think is not true, right?
Okay.
Yeah, it's not true. But do you know where it comes from, the fact that people think he's allergic?
No.
It's because, and it does actually make perfect sense. So as Bugs Bunny, they experimented with lots of sound effects for how you can generate the sound of eating a carrot. Mm. And they realized the only thing that generates the sound of eating a carrot is eating a carrot.
Did they not have the big noise?
The one thing he can't do is one weakness.
Every time the big noise ate a carrot, it was completely silent. Wasn't it? It was so weird.
It just sounds like a car going past.
Famously sucked his carrots like a lolly. So they couldn't use him. And so Mel Blanc realised he just had to eat carrots in order to get the sound effect. But once you're swallowing carrot, then you can't say your line. So he'd have a spittoon and he just had to chew a carrot and then spit it out in order to then say his line. And from there, develop the idea that, oh, he's allergic to carrots because he was always spitting carrots out.
I would have just got a runner in to eat the carrots next
I know,
to the
could they not hire a
especially if you can't talk
eater.
And eat carrots, yeah.
That would be the most awesome job, wouldn't it? I was carrot eater for Mel Blanc.
Stop the podcast!
Stop the podcast!
Hi everyone, we'd like to let you know that this week we are sponsored by ExpressVPN.
That's right, ExpressVPN is a virtual private network that basically means whenever you connect to an unencrypted network, so if you're in a cafe or a hotel or using any kind of public Wi-Fi, you've built a wall around your personal information.
Absolutely. So imagine you were sat in a cafe on an unencrypted network. That 12-year-old hacker sat in the corner laughing at you could get all of your information if you did not have a VPN. And really, ExpressVPN is probably the best one out there. It creates a secure encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet. It would take a hacker with a supercomputer over a billion years to get past its encryption, and you can get it right now.
Yes, you can, and you can secure your data today if you go to expressvpn.com/fish, and you'll get an extra 3 months for free.
Absolutely. So fire up the app with just one button, protecting your phones, laptops, tablets, and more by going to expressvpn.com/fish. That's expressvpn.com/fish, and get your extra 3 months for free. Okay, on with the podcast.
On with the show.
Okay, it is time for fact number two, and that is Alex.
My fact this week is that in the 1950s, you could catch a bus from London to Calcutta.
Okay.
You did have to book. You couldn't just like tap in.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it's outside the oyster.
Yeah, they
zone,
didn't have an oyster zone in Calcutta. Yeah.
Where was the longest stretch where if you missed your stop?
You're frantically pressing the bell. Yeah. So this is a bus service that ran from 1957 until 1976. You could get single tickets or return tickets, which I thought was quite weird because you could take a bus to India and then just be stuck there.
Which lots of people did.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah. It was £85 for a single, which I think is about £2,500 today. But it's more of a package holiday. It included travel and food and accommodation. And it was another £65 if you wanted to come back again.
Okay, because often a return ticket these days is like £2 more if you get a train.
Yeah, no. This is almost double, yeah.
Could you get like that thing where you split your tickets between all the different places?
Split fare.
No, none of the complicated
maths. God, we've come a long way, haven't we?
We really have, yeah. I mean, yeah. But we can't go to India anymore on a bus, so.
Right. If your bus is 15 minutes late to the next destination, can you reclaim all of the money?
That would be great. So this bus was equipped with beds and a kitchen and heaters and a music system for parties, apparently, and also something called reading facilities, which I don't know what that is, like a chair,
like a library, I guess, like a bookshelf.
Sounds like maybe a Spice World bus.
It does. It sounds like a lot of fun. This specific first service was called the India Man, and it was run by a guy called Oswald Joseph Garrow Fisher, which is, I've never heard of someone who has a double-barreled first name and last name.
Do you know that he was known, everyone called him Paddy? I was reading an article from the Buffalo Courier Express from the time, and it said, obviously, again, of its time, it said, Garrow Fisher, who is better known as Paddy because he is Irish.
I mean, it is easier to say than Oswald Joseph Garrow Fisher.
His name with all those hyphens actually would look like, confusingly, like the destination.
It does, because on the outside it did say London, Calcutta, London on the bus, which I think was quite cool because it is a loop trip. And the bus went from London. It was a 10,000 mile journey on what became known as the hippie route. So it went via Belgium, what was then Yugoslavia, to northwestern India,
And up through like places today that you couldn't go through.
I guess it must have gone through, if it's gone through Yugoslavia, it must have gone through Turkey, and then like Iran,
Pakistan.
Well, it started a big phenomenon of bus journeys all around the world, and this route became quite popular, but it ended because of
it was the Iranian revolution, wasn't it?
Exactly, yeah, the wars.
And a lot of my parents, well, not a lot, a few of my parents' friends have done it. It was the gap year of its day, wasn't it? And they do talk about how different it was then, that you could go through all of these countries. And I know it's Cold War, so it was, you know, not a bed of roses, but now you would be told it was too dangerous to get a bus through any of those places. And then you just went through and like, were met with friendly receptions in all those countries. But didn't they think they'd got murdered at one point?
Yeah, so on the way there, he writes all about the cliffs around Mount Ararat and like going through these crazy like hairpin bends. In Iran, they had to put wooden planks under the wheels because the bus was sinking into the sand. It had to be dug out of a bog in Persia. It was sandstorms and rains and incredible heat and collapsed bridges and like a crash. Like, I mean, it sounds like a ridiculous journey. And there are some amazing pictures you can see online as well. And yeah, on the return trip, they were massively delayed by like, I think, a month because of an outbreak of Asian influenza. So they had to take a massive detour. And that prompted a rumor that they'd been kidnapped and murdered by bandits. And I think the British embassy in Tehran thought that and were so relieved that they like had a cocktail party for them.
I read that definitely they had the cocktail party. I read that at the time in the newspapers, but I couldn't find any evidence in the newspapers that people thought they had been.
I think it was a story because Gary Fisher said it, and I think it was a bit of a, hey, they thought we'd been killed, so they were so happy to see us. Yeah. Probably a throwaway. Did they think you'd been killed line, or did they just have some cocktails going spare? Exactly, yeah. It's an embassy.
They do it for
cocktails.
Every bus that comes in.
Exactly. We got invited to an embassy once just for being in town, didn't we?
Yeah. Oh, I thought they thought we'd been murdered.
But yeah, 50 days. They were 50 days delayed back, which is
right.
I feel sorry for the people waiting at the bus stop.
And then three came along at once.
Exactly. Like, I can't do 3 minutes on a Jubilee line.
And they were called freaks, weren't they? They called themselves freaks. The hippie trailers.
Cool.
And there's still a street called Freak Street in Kathmandu, which was sort of like famously the kind of centre of where all the hippies sort of ended up, hung out, built lots of communities. Yeah, so there's still Freak Street. And it inspired Lonely Planet, the hippie trail. So yeah, Maureen and Tony Wheeler, they did the hippie trail, and then they thought, this is fun, we'll write about it. They messed up the name. They listened to a song and thought it referred to Lonely Planet. It was a song called Space Captain by Joe Cocker, and it actually referred to Lovely Planet, which makes more sense.
Yeah.
They should have called
Lonely
it Lovely Planet.
Lonely Planet is actually quite a sad title for a travelling book. It doesn't really inspire.
It is for people who travel on their own, isn't it, Lonely Planet? Or it was originally, I think.
Maybe it was originally.
That's what I would have assumed. But don't like I'm single. I buy a lot of products for single people. Don't put the word lonely in the branding.
So you go to Sainsbury's and you get a lonely meal for one.
We know Wendy's meal for one. I'm just like, oh, thank you.
Sad cheesecake.
Yeah. This is my die alone single bed.
Some stuff on buses.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Who was the first person to ever be thrown under the bus?
Oh.
You know, this is like a... If you watch the traitors and stuff these days, everyone's saying, oh, I threw them under the bus, or they're going to throw me under the bus.
Is it going to be like a Roman, like, thrown under the chariot?
Wait, so are you? Are there two possible answers here? One of someone was thrown under a bus physically, but then someone used the term for the first time later, or the two combined?
Okay, so my question to you is the term to be thrown under the bus.
Yeah.
Who was the first person that term was used about?
About.
Not who was literally thrown under the bus. It's all metaphorical.
Was it connected to buses in any way, though? Was it totally detached from what they were doing?
Totally detached.
Is this guessable?
In my experience with QI stuff, it's either going to be Stone Age or it's going to be 1800s, but never.
Okay, it's neither of those things. Yeah. But it's guessable because it's one of the most famous people in British history.
Yeah, okay.
Churchill?
Who was betrayed?
Keep going.
Who was betrayed? Come on, let's think
Thatcher?
Of someone famously betrayed.
Correct!
Oh. Thatcher!
Alex is just listing famous people.
Name conservative MPs and villains.
I hate people who play 20 questions like that. Don't use all your guesses on names. You got lucky this time.
So this was basically, if you wanted to get rid of a politician, you would say, what if they fell under a bus?
Right.
Do you know what I mean? We can't get rid of them
with a little accident.
Can't get rid of them any other way. What if they fell under the bus? Then maybe we'll get a new leader, kind of thing. So that was a saying. But during the early 1980s, when the Falkland Island invasion happened, someone in the UK said President Galtieri of Argentina pushed her, meaning Margaret Thatcher, under the bus, which the gossips had said was the only means of her removal. So it was, falling under a bus was always a thing, but this was the first time someone was metaphorically pushed under a bus.
Oh, really? Wow. A lot of people threw her under the bus, didn't they? I'd never thought of Galtieri as being the main guy.
Well, she did last quite a long time after that. And actually, the Falklands War didn't really do her any damage at all. They almost threw her into the driving seat of the bus.
I would say rather the opposite.
They threw her into that best seat on the top deck where it looks like you're driving.
Oh, yeah, that is a good seat.
Yeah, but you don't have enough leg room, so it swings and roundabouts. Okay, just me who complains about that. Never mind. Do you know there's a bus route in London between West Ealing and West Ruislip, which is about a 20-25 minute journey?
Yeah.
And it goes once a week on Wednesdays at 11:17 in the morning.
What?
And no one gets it.
Is it purely for throwing politicians under?
Those two places are very relatively close to each other.
Yes.
And I can't think of any reason why I would ever want to go between the two of them.
I think, you know...
Is it a ghost bus? Is it real? Is it a ghost bus?
There you go. It is a ghost bus. And the people of West Ealing or West Ruislip who have friends in the other, please write to James complaining about, you know, why you might want
oh,
to.
Oh, yeah. I'll wait for the flood of emails to come in.
I'm going to go ride it. I love riding a ghost bus.
Yeah, well, it's the kind of thing that people like you do ride. I think they only...
Try it again with a little less contempt.
Yeah, and only get singles tickets because no one has a
Fuck you.
It is a ghost bus, though. You're right. And it's related to ghost trains, which I actually don't think we've ever mentioned on this podcast, but ghost
really?
Trains are yeah. train routes that are kept open even though no one gets them, because it's actually bureaucratically really expensive to shut down a specific route. So there are various routes in the UK, 30 or so, where no one gets this train route, but the train still runs, so that, you know, if you wanted to reopen it properly, then it's still yeah. open.
But that's the thing, but there's more reasons to keep a ghost train, because it like maintains the track and keeps everything running and keeps your train in good order, whereas okay. a ghost bus, you just use the bus somewhere else, and like, what's the reason for it?
Well, because this used to be a train route and no one was getting it.
Well, so it's driving on the train tracks.
No, it's not driving on the train tracks. If you will hear me
sorry,
out.
Sorry.
It used to be a rail route. The rail route no longer exists, so it is a bus replacement service. So this is called a bus replacement service.
A permanent bus replacement service.
For a rail that doesn't exist anymore. And it's because it's bureaucratically too expensive to cancel the rail route.
Right. Can I ask, why did they remove the rail route when so many people want to go from West Ruislip to Ealing or whatever it was?
All right, there's only one person. But they make that trip all the time.
Do you reckon they'll continue downgrading it and then eventually they'll just be like a skateboard so you can yeah. if you want it's technically a DFL yeah. service? You're talking about a rail replacement bus service. Have you heard of a bus replacement rail service?
Bus replacement. I haven't, but I get it, and it feels yeah. plausible.
So in 2016, there were two villages in Scotland,
yeah.
Wanlockhead and Leadhills, and they're in South Lanarkshire, and the road connecting them was closed for resurfacing for a week. But this was a bit of an issue for people who live there, a lot of elderly people. There's a doctor's surgery in one and shops in the other, and they need to get from one to the other. And there was a 45-mile diversion if you wanted to drive around, so it wasn't really workable for all these people. So there was a small volunteer-run railway line that goes between the two, and it's just a tourist attraction.
Right.
So the authorities decided to turn it into an official service that you could actually
okay.
travel between.
It's with the two old grannies who do the heritage yeah, tickets yeah. on their old typewriter, having yeah. to print out just hundreds
Something,
a day.
Thousands and thousands of commuters every morning are coming in.
That's
yeah.
amazing.
And it's, I think, the only one of its kind that
very
I've
cool.
ever heard
that
of.
That is
yeah.
very cool.
In 2015, there was a tweet that went viral for revealing that there was a bus service that went to Woking. And do you know what number it was? What number bus you'd get to Woking?
69. Oh, sorry, no, I don't know. I don't know. Oh, 95. Woking 95.
Nine,
right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh.
925.
Because
the Dolly Parton.
I went through Woking on a train once,
yep.
and I saw the word Woking, and I was just thinking, oh, Woking 95. And then I looked at my watch, and yep. it was 8:55 in the morning, because I was going somewhere in the morning. So,
okay.
So I was like, Woking 5 to 9, close enough, and tweeted it.
It's not close
enough.
It's not
close enough.
It has to be exact.
Woking 5 to 9 is kind of funny. Like, it's
yeah.
funny enough.
Oh, yeah, yeah, 5 to... Yeah, okay.
Did no, it, was no, it I'm a successful a, tweet?
No, it did not. Right.
Okay.
Shocking.
Well, so, yeah, there was a bus service called 925. This guy tweeted it back in 2015, except after getting however many retweets and likes, turned out that he had photoshopped it, that it didn't exist, that it was in fact the 701. So this bus didn't exist. However, the people who ran the bus service loved it so much that a few years later, they did change it to the 925. So the
good.
Joke
that's
became
nice.
A real thing. But here's what's interesting.
Well, my story was less good, but at least it was true.
Well, no, this guy made a joke,
no,
which then got
true.
Turned
yeah.
true, which
but he
is
lied.
Pretty incredible.
He did lie. He lied.
Okay, wow.
Can I quickly do one more thing about going to India?
Yeah.
So there's a book called Husband Hunting in the Raj by Anne de Courcy. And she's writing about how lots of women in the late 19th century would go to India to look for a husband. And that's because the Indian civil service insisted that all its male staff remain bachelors until the age of 30. And in those days, if you're a woman and you were not married by the time you were in your mid to late 20s, then
a lonely woman.
You were a lonely woman, yeah, exactly. And so apparently there was this sort of big influx of British women who every year would just all go to India to find a husband.
Wow.
Snap
wow.
up those single civil
Isn't
servants.
That amazing. And there was loads of like pamphlets and books that people would write to tell you what to do if you're a woman going to India. There was one, a few words of advice on traveling to ladies by a guy called HMLS. We don't know who it was, who said, choose a simple dress of soft, warm tweed of dark grey colour. It is also a good plan to use very old underclothing, such as can be thrown away when soiled.
Excuse me?
That is a good...
Is that about the curries?
It doesn't... There's no more information.
I reckon that's about the curries.
No, you're on a long
you
pass.
You can't... No laundry. So they're like, don't waste your good stuff because you're going to have to chuck it.
This isn't a bus to say this would be on a steam liner or something.
Oh, okay,
but it's,
right.
I mean, it's a very long journey.
These poor men, all these women turning up being like, I'm not wearing anything under this tweed.
I was when we set off.
It's in this plastic bag.
I'm just going to tie it to this tree.
Yeah, this poor town halfway to India, they just got piles of dirty women's laundry things fly tipped to her.
Okay, it is time for fact number three, and that is James.
Okay, my fact this week is that hockey masks were invented thanks to chronic sinusitis.
Well, they originally wanted pewed tissue just around the nose.
Yeah, exactly. No, this is something that strikes home to me because I am a very keen hockey player. No, I suffer from sinusitis quite a lot, so I'm really glad that some good has come out of it. And this is the hockey mask. And when I say hockey mask, one, I'm talking about ice hockey. Two, I'm talking about the mask that a goaltender would wear. So, you know, it's not the helmet. That
it's the Halloween film.
Yeah, Jason Voorhees.
Jason Voorhees one, yeah, exactly.
Who suffered chronic suffer of sinusitis,
yes.
Tragically.
Which is why he was so angry.
So he never said anything. So he's like...
So this was a guy called Jacques Plant, or Jacques Plant, or Jacques Planté. Enchanté. Je m'appelle Jacques Planté. And he had terrible sinusitis, and he had an operation. After he had the operation, he had to keep his nose intact, but he still wanted to play hockey, and so he wore a mask to stop the puck from hitting him in the face. His coach, who was called Toe Blake, his first name was Toe, as in the bit at the end of your foot. He wasn't very happy about it, but he said, okay, well, you know, I need you on the team, whatever. As long as you take it off when your sinusitis gets better, then it's fine.
And when, this was the 50s?
Oh, yes, I should say this was the late 50s. And then later on, he was hit in the face with a puck. And he went off and came back with the mask again.
Mid-game.
And then they went on a massive winning streak. And so the manager said, okay, fine, like, this is obviously working. And then all the other goaltenders saw this as a good idea, and it just became everywhere.
And he really defied Toe Blake's wishes, because Toe was like,
yeah, he was a
you
dick
get that
about
mask
it. Yeah.
Out of here. And he was like, no, either I'm going on with the mask or I'm not going on at all.
Yeah.
And
it's entirely fair, like with a broken nose, like he's hit in the face with the puck.
Yeah. It's not the first time anyone's ever gone on with a mask.
No.
It happened, you know, sporadically throughout the years because people had their face busted up. But Planty. he's the one who said, no, I'm wearing it, and I'm going to wear it again and again and again, and then slowly changed the culture of ice hockey.
Yeah.
He gave
the finger to Toe.
He sure did.
I remember he hadn't said anything for 3 minutes.
Do you know why Toe Blake was called Toe Blake?
Well, because both of his parents were also called Blake.
Yes.
And by tradition, you keep the surname.
He's bang on, guys.
Was it a family name? Were there four other toes?
Did he have one enormous toe?
No.
Was a toe. like in Spy Kids.
He was. They wanted to donate his toe to science afterwards. It was so prominent. A clue, Buzz Aldrin.
Oh, he left his toe on the moon. He gave his toe to Buzz Aldrin.
One small toe for man.
Okay, so Buzz Aldrin got his name because his sister said his...
Yes.
Called him Buzz?
Called him Buzz. So his real name is Hector, but his little sister, Hecto, toe is where it stuck. But what he was known as within the ice hockey world was...
Head, shoulders, knees, up.
Who would have thought you get two head, shoulders, knees and toes into one podcast?
No, he was known as the old lamplighter.
Really?
Yeah, and he's amazing.
Why?
He's been listed as one of the 100 greatest NHL players in history.
Sure.
The old lamplighter, because he's so good at scoring goals that a light goes on when you score a goal to let you know. So it's the old lamplighter.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's good.
That's very nice.
Yeah.
So the first actual example of anyone wearing a mask that we know of was a woman called Elizabeth Graham of Queen's University, who in 1927 wore a fencing mask. And according to her son, she had done it because she'd recently had dental work and she wanted to protect her teeth.
There does seem to be a vanity element to the original masks. There's her who didn't want to damage more of her teeth and get more dental bills.
That just goes a little bit beyond vanity. So I don't want my teeth smashed up.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
It's a hard puck being smashed at your face.
They travel up to 160 kilometres an hour. I don't think it's like, oh, you absolute wuss. You want a mask in your face. I just think they're so mean back in the day.
No, but I think she specifically said that she was trying to save her dad the dental bills. But that's probably because she was too afraid to just say, I'm really scared of being whacked in the face with a puck. But also there was a guy called Jack Crawford who was one of the first people to wear a helmet in ice hockey. And that was in the 1930s. And he wore it apparently because he was bald and he just wanted to conceal his bald patch.
That's so funny.
That's a great idea.
That's protecting your vanity.
Yeah, that's more a vanity thing. Yeah. You're absolutely right.
I wouldn't put the vanity on the only woman that we have in this question.
I'm allowed to do whatever I like with the only woman in the question, Alex.
Do you know that when, actually speaking of women in hockey, when international women's hockey first became a big thing, and this was in the 1980s, a lot of the leagues required breast protectors. So you had to wear like something solid over your breasts so that they don't get hit by the puck. But one of the problems that they had in, I think it was in Sweden, is that one of the referees refused to check if the players were wearing them. So they couldn't enforce the law because it was a male referee and he wouldn't go in and just prod and go, are they just very hard breasts? Are you wearing a protector?
That's a weird job, isn't it? Like, what do you do? Like, grope women before games?
Yeah. I started as the carrot eater from Melbourne. Yeah.
While we're on referees, has anyone heard of Frederick Charles Albert Waghorn, a.k.a. the old wag?
He had a tail?
No, he's quite innovative hockey referee. He set a lot of rules. One of the biggest things that he did was referees didn't used to have a whistle. Instead of a whistle, do you know what they had? They had a cowbell.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Because it's like an alpine, I don't know, like mountainous cold.
Because you have cowbells in snow sometimes.
Yeah, I know. I'm not really going anywhere with that.
Yeah. The problem is that people kept turning up with their own cowbells. So you had people making it so that plays couldn't happen.
So what they did is they used something that no one else could possibly get hold of, a whistle.
Exactly. Now, this is what's so amazing.
Is it possible that the audience was just cows?
But this is what's amazing about the old wag's decision is that there wasn't at the time a thing of you having a whistle. Whistles weren't...
They weren't commercially
available.
We're
living in a time where whistles weren't that commercial.
You're right, because at the start of the 20th century, everyone used to carry a cowbell around.
Exactly. And the cowbells were
big. There
was a
lot more farming going on, maybe. That was more accessible.
Yeah, no one really had them. So you were more likely to have a cowbell come to a hockey match than you were a whistle. This is true. And so he introduced the whistle. He introduced professional referees in amateur hockey games. The practice of dropping the puck from a few feet high when you're going through at the start. He did that. And he also said you can't count it as a goal if the puck breaks in half and half the puck goes inside the net. You need the full puck going inside the net. I guess maybe back in the day the materials were different and it did happen. But here's the thing about the whistle. He took it from being, not only introduced it, but took it from being a steel whistle to a plastic whistle because referees kept getting their lips stuck around it in the ice cold. Yeah. Yeah.
They can't stop whistling. What's wrong? That's so funny. Something else that hockey masks have given us. The world record for the farthest eyeball pop, like in the cartoon, exactly. Some people can pop their eyeballs sort of out quite far out of their sockets.
Yeah, so deliberately as opposed to an accidental pop.
Well, yes, I guess so. So this is the world record for the farthest eyeball pop by a woman, and it's 12 millimetres, which is quite a lot, obviously. It's by a woman called Kim Goodman. She discovered the talent when she was hit on the head by a hockey mask and her eyeballs popped out.
What was the context for a hockey mask hitting her on the head?
I actually don't have it, but what happened was that her eyes went like that out of her head, and she was like, oh my God. And then she discovered she could do this, and then now she holds the world record for the furthest pop.
How bizarre.
So this is just for women, though, because obviously all men have that whenever Jessica Rabbit walks.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And they awooga noise, yeah.
It is funny how much pushback there always is to protective equipment in sports because it kind of degrades the sport. I mean, people had the piss taken out of them a lot, didn't they? The first people to wear hockey masks, the first people who were wearing helmets, and... People used to have extraordinary injuries, and they still do, actually, really awful injuries sometimes, but like eyeballs being slashed and stuff like that. Brian Berard, I think, had he lost an eye and then continued to play with 20 over 400 vision.
The old winker.
He had 20 over... What?
400 vision. He had numerous operations on his eye to help try and restore his sight until it was eventually at the legal limit, which is 20 over 400. So as in, we have 20/20,
yeah.
But that means that what I can see at 400 feet, you, as 20 over 400, can't see until you're 20 feet away.
Huh? what did that mean?
And then he was still quite good at hockey, actually.
Cool. Yeah,
but not as good as he would have been. Are you guys familiar with the most popular genre of sports romance in the world?
Okay. Well, it must be hockey related.
Yeah, there is a clue in the fact that I've inserted it into this fact. But hockey romance is extremely popular.
As in, really? As literature, you mean?
Yeah. Right, okay. Hockey romance novels. So Amazon has a list of the top sports novels, sports romance novels.
Wow, she gave me a Zambona. Yeah.
Want a puck?
That one I get.
All right.
What was the first one?
A Zamboni is that little machine that drives around to make the ice smooth.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that.
James's is actually much better because the puck one is used in almost every title.
Oh, so I'm the commercial one. I'm the one keeping this industry afloat, am I? Apologies.
I'm the one who's doing some esoteric poetry.
Yeah.
James, your Kafka-esque will be discovered after your time.
Exactly. There's old Dan Brown over here.
It's amazing, though. They sell so many. All the top 10 books in Amazon's list of sports romance are all hockey romance.
Wow. I wonder what their demographic is.
Canadians? I think I can tell you.
Look, all right. I'm sorry. I'm just wondering. What is it?
I think it's Canadian women.
Okay.
So they sell up to 2 million, estimated 2 million for the most popular, which I can tell you as people who sell books is... more than we've sold in many of our books by a bunch of about 100. And yeah, they all have titles like Puck Me and Pucking Around and Hot as Puck.
It doesn't sound like romance. It sounds more like erotic pornography literature.
I think they are traversing that line quite a lot, yes.
Yeah. And do you think that... I wonder if it's less about Canadian women just like it and more about you're going to write a sporting erotica book and it's the easiest pun to make. Yeah.
Could be right.
We were talking about ghost bus stops earlier. Yeah. Last fact.
I've only just realised how much like Ghostbusters they are.
Remember, have you seen there's a company in London. There's a company in London that does bus tours of like ghost tours of London, and they're called Ghost Bus Tours. And I think that's such a good
idea. Yes, that's lovely. Yeah. That's really good.
See, there goes Dan again with a commercial pun.
So, do you know what a ghost keeper is?
Ghost keeper. So it's presumably about hockey.
Yeah. Is it a goalkeeper that lets all the goals in?
He's actually
straight through him.
He's actually a real person.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's called Jim Bob Ghost Keeper. And
the old ghost keeper.
He's a Canadian hockey goalkeeper, and he the reason he's notable is that in 2018 he won Name of the Year. You know those competitions
Oh, so that's his real name, is it?
It must be. I think that's part of the. Yeah. Or certainly it must be his Diepold name. Yeah. Just because I do love a hockey nickname. So goalies have great nicknames. There's John William Bauer, who was known as the China Wall. Couldn't get past him.
The China Wall.
Do you mean the Great Wall of China?
Yeah, exactly.
A, you can get through that, and B, a wall made of China would be very smashable by a puck traveling 160 kilometers an hour.
That's true. Yeah.
Maybe he's visible from space.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Something I thought was really interesting that I didn't know about hockey, and I'm sure people who watch it a lot will, is that, so 10% of ordinary people, left-handed. In hockey, the majority play left-handed.
Oh.
60 to 70% of NHL players shoot left-handed. And it seems to be that basically in hockey, it's really important to be quite ambidextrous because, you know, you're having to use both hands a lot and flip it around. And so I think a lot of coaches think the way to get super high level, and the more high level you get, the more left-handed players you get, the way to get super high level is to breed ambidexterity. So they're just taught from a young age, shoot with your off hand. So isn't that weird?
You want to come up with a whole new thing, like learn to play it, holding it with your mouth or something so you can have both hands. Like come up with something that's really crazy.
What are you going to do with your hands while you're...
I don't know.
The only thing you could do with your hands in a game of hockey is to hold the stick.
Yeah, that's true. I'm just trying to
You can write hockey romance novels with your hands whilst playing
your mouth. And I can imagine... people are wearing the breast protectors or something.
I can imagine what the romance is if you've got a hockey stick in your mouth.
Where's the puck, though?
That's really interesting because ice hockey came from another sport called shinny.
Oh, that sounds painful.
Yeah, I think that is probably where it got its name, that people would be wrapped on the shins. Because there's lots of different rules to this. Basically, it's hitting a ball into a goal, quite often on ice in the winter. But one rule that seems to be common no matter how the game was played is that you had to play it right-handed all the time. But if you hit a shot with your left hand, the nearest opponent to you had to shout, "Shinny on your own side," and then was allowed to hit you in the shins with their stick.
Oh, God. Oh.
That was, yeah.
I guess you're getting the warning, though.
Yeah, I mean, you can sort of, like, clench
tense.
Yourself.
Mm-hmm. You can't clench your shins. Like, you can't. There's nothing you can do.
I feel like you can.
Clench your shin muscles,
you can,
everyone.
Like, psychologically prepare for it, but you can't physically...
Oh, I tell you what.
You could run away.
I'm clenching my shin right now.
No, you're not. You're clenching your calf, I reckon.
Yeah, but it's pulling back the muscle. It's pulling back
there's
the
nothing,
skin.
That's the point. There's nothing in between your shin bone. There's a few layers of skin and a tiny bit of... There's
you're
no
right.
muscle. There's
if anything, you want to unclench.
That's why it's so painful.
You want to have a paunch to your shin so it doesn't... Hit the bones.
When he walked into the room, he had incredibly muscly thighs, but a paunch on his shin. He was clearly a hockey player.
Okay, it is time for our final fact of the show, and that is Anna.
My fact this week is that the Lesu people of Papua New Guinea all avoid having sex during the pig farrowing season.
That's my excuse.
The lonely Lesu people.
Every season is pig farrowing season in the Alex Bell world. What's pig farrowing?
Yes, it's when pigs are giving birth. And I find it quite interesting that it's specifically for pigs. Only pigs farrow, which is nice that they've got that special word when they're all getting piglets. And I actually read about this when I was researching last week's fact. And we were talking about pregnancy stuff, and I was reading about couvade, which is the practice which happens in various cultures around the world where men sort of take on pregnancy symptoms or enact pregnancy symptoms or sometimes experience them. They'll take to their beds, they'll perform certain rituals. Anyway, I was reading about this in Britannica, and it was talking about the Lesu men of Papua New Guinea. And it said they avoid certain things before the birth of children in that mimicking pregnancy way. But this also applies to non-human propagation, as they put it. So the whole community avoids intercourse while pig farrowing is happening.
The important question is, how long is the pig farrowing season?
Yeah, good question.
Season's a big word.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not the pig farrowing afternoon, is it?
I don't know, but I mean, I think it's a few weeks, but I like to think that the pigs really drag it out watching these sex-starved Melanesian men. Yeah, it was interesting. And Lesu is just a little village in Papua New Guinea, so it's a small portion of people. But yeah, what I mean by it being related to couvade is it's about like things giving birth to other things and the taboos that you have around that to make sure that it's good luck. So they avoid sex in the hope that the pigs will farrow nicely.
I think they had some couvade practices in ancient Egypt where when a child was born, the man would sort of play out the ritual of labor. So they'd go into their bed and like...
complain.
Like, basically, it kind of sounds kind of mocking, to be honest. Yeah, like
the dress in the mother's clothing.
Sound, I
very
like
helpful,
they could,
I imagine.
It'd be a little bit more useful, I was thinking, yeah. Like pretending
it's
to be
funny, when I, when my wife gave birth, I was in the room when it happened. And she had a cesarean, and what they said to me was, okay, your job is, here is a Bluetooth speaker, put on some nice music that your wife would like, okay? And what I think is, obviously, attaching your Bluetooth speaker to your phone is one of the most annoying sort of time-consuming things. Exactly. Yeah. But it's just a thing that they're like, at least making the man useful, giving him something which is difficult enough that he feels like he's done something, but easy enough that it's not going to affect anything.
5 hours in, you're sweating, you're screaming. I can't do it, I'm too difficult.
I fucking hate you!
which type of fish did you play?
It was one you went in. So I was reading a very old book called The Golden Bough by Sir James George Frazer, and this is like the Bible of anthropology, which was written well over 100 years ago. nowadays, if you look at it through today's lens, a lot of the things that he came up with are probably not true and a bit dodgy. But, you know, he did look at lots of different cultures and see what they did. And he found that there was quite a lot of cultures where when there was something happening in the farm, like, you know, the pigs are giving birth or we're laying the seeds for some plants or stuff, there were quite a lot of people not having sex.
Right. Basically. Because they were just so busy.
No, well, it could have been that that was the reason. His theory, again, we don't really adhere to his theories much, is that basically you're taking up too much of the world's energy, you know, and you don't want to use up all the energy because you want to let the crops grow. And if you have too much sex, then the chi or whatever isn't going into the plants and they won't grow as well.
This is what I told myself when I shared a flat and my flatmates all off having loads of sex and I was sitting in front of the TV with all the cereal in my pajamas listening to them thinking, this is fine, I shouldn't be
listening to them.
You should put the volume on the TV, Alex.
You know what I mean? There's a lot of thin walls. You can hear stuff from the left and the right, and you can't hear your YouTube video about buses.
But yeah, according to him, in other parts of Melanesia, men wouldn't sleep with their wives when they were training their vines.
These are all excruciatingly slow things.
Yeah. Nicaraguans wouldn't have sex between planting the maize and reaping the maize.
Wow.
And the Katish people of Australia wouldn't have sex after laying the grass seed until the first bits of grass popped up.
So it's almost like Lent. It's just a season of
abstinence.
But then he also said that, let's say this theory of the energy is true, some people thought, well, by having sex, we'll increase the energy in the area and it will be better for the plants.
Yeah, sow some seeds while you're sowing some seeds.
Exactly. Kind of, and so he said that in Ukraine, all the young married people would go into a field and roll around in it after you've planted some seeds.
Mm. What, having sex with each other?
It just said rolling around.
Right.
It's like when you roll down a hill.
Yeah, I think they might have been naked, sexy. So that's bringing some energy in there.
Okay.
He said in Russia, it would be similar, but it would be a priest who would be rolled around by all the women in the village.
That sounds really fun. That's like when you got the bumps on your birthday.
So it's just one priest and all the women.
Right.
And then he said, the Pipilis of Central America have an older and ruder custom designed to impart fertility into the fields. And because it was an old book, whenever it was something really rude, he wouldn't say what it was.
Oh, okay.
So we, you know, it's some kind of...
But he would put in a teaser, like a little taster.
For me, it's either having literal sex in the field or masturbating into the field.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be that one.
Yeah.
In Tudor times in England, according to historian Lauren Johnson, you weren't supposed to have sex any time in Lent, any time in Advent, any time in Pentecost, when a woman was menstruating, when a woman was pregnant, for a month after giving birth, when a woman was breastfeeding, during any of the holy days, during any of the days when you were taking communion, or the days leading up to taking communion.
Okay.
You're not supposed to have sex in any
of those
days.
But on the 7th of March...
Yeah.
What do you mean you've got a headache?
On the 7th of March, assuming that isn't a holy day, but not in the daytime.
Right, okay.
So it has to be in the nighttime. And also, especially in the Middle Ages, you could only really have sex to produce a child.
But presumably people did, right?
How assiduous?
It's just taboo. It's just not talking about it.
That's undoubtedly true. But if you wanted to get away with it, you didn't have to go to a church to get married. Basically, it was just an exchange of vows in front of a witness. That meant you were married.
That witness was usually me.
The witness couldn't be downstairs watching a bus video. Yeah. They had to be. So, for instance, there was one 15th century couple who got married in Yorkshire while milking a cow.
Oh,
okay, that's
quite
nice.
Cool. I like that. Yeah.
That's one of those hipster quirky weddings, isn't it?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
We did ours on the top of the Empire State Building. Oh, we did ours while milking a cow.
Where did you get married?
Yeah, on the side of Arthur's Seat, next to a tiny ruined chapel. What's your point?
Pig sex?
Okay.
As in, should we talk about it?
Yeah, go on.
You weren't suggesting it. Yeah, let's talk about it.
When pigs are pregnant, they're pregnant for 3 months, 3 weeks, and 3 days. That's the gestation period, is that right?
Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
3 weeks and 3 days.
Yeah. I mean, not exactly, presumably, but their due date, you're saying, when they go to the doctor.
Obviously, it varies, but like that's the official period, yeah.
Nice.
Something.
Also, pig sex smells like truffles, and that's why we use pig for truffles, because female pigs, they think they're looking for sexy male pigs. That's what they're smelling and looking for.
Really?
Yeah.
And they think sexy male pigs live underground.
No, they're obviously they're just horny as fuck and looking for anything that smells like a sexy pig.
Fair.
Yeah.
There is a building in China that contains 300,000 pigs.
Mm.
Real pigs or China pigs?
Real pigs. The great pigs of China.
What floor?
They're on all the floors.
The entire building is a pig farm.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like probably 20 stories high, about as long as it is high, and it's just full of pigs everywhere.
Wow.
And they have the...
I'm imagining like a pig office, sorry, now, like where they're wearing ties.
You know what? It is like the building looks like a really sort of dystopian office building. Yeah. It's very nondescript.
Right.
It just looks like a big old building. They have temperature control, ventilation control. The animals are fed automatically. Just one person in a central control clicks a button.
Oh my God.
And then each pig gets a little bit of food. And the idea is that if you farm pigs in this way, then you can get lots of meat, which they need in China. But also, they don't mix with the domestic pigs, so there might be less transfer of diseases and stuff like
rumors.
That.
Right.
Where, of course, everyone else says, well, on the other hand, you've got 300,000 pigs next to each other, so if one of them gets sick, probably they all get sick.
And it's also just sounds a bit sad. I mean, I know we do it with people, and everyone goes into the office every day, but...
It's not quite the same,
it's not the same as exactly, yeah.
Imagine if you're late for a meeting, and you've got the address wrong by one billboard.
I was just looking up some other sex-related taboos, like things that you do for luck or things that you can't do, and came across the Banyankole people they're in Uganda and southwest Uganda, and the aunt in those communities has a really interesting position. So it's her responsibility to make sure when her niece gets married that the groom is potent and able to, you know, perform, and that
can
they're sexually...
Stop looking so intently into my eyes when you talk about this.
Hey, that plant over there that Matt Parker really liked is still doing well, isn't it?
It's really, yeah. It's really thriving.
Who jizzed into it? Sorry.
So they, and this is actually another example of how a lot of people still have the anthropological approach that is very old-fashioned and offensive. There's so much online about how the aunts have sex with their niece's grooms, not helped by, I think, people from that community who say, yeah, yeah, we do that, but I'm pretty sure they're joking. But what the aunt does do is she watches the first time the couple has sex. So she comes into the room to make sure that everything's functioning.
How interesting. Yeah. Is that still practice, are you saying?
Or? Yeah, it is sometimes, I believe.
If that's what you do, it's not weird. I mean, that's the whole thing about sexual practice.
Yeah, yeah,
that's
just... Absolutely.
It's just humans. We just try new things, don't we?
Yeah. And there's always this whole thing about all the taboos around the stuff that's the most basic thing we can do as creatures, like sex and like going to the toilet and stuff like that. We don't talk about it and it's all private, but it is the only things that nearly all of us have in common. So, like, why?
I mean, pretty much all we talk about is sex and going to the loo, to be honest.
No, that's true.
Certainly on this podcast.
Yeah, obviously. We're advanced as a society on this.
We've broken down those taboos.
Okay, that's it. That is all of our facts. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to get in contact with any of us about the things that we have said over the course of this podcast, we can all be found on various places on social media. I'm on Instagram. I'm on @Schreiberland. James?
My Instagram is no such thing as James Harkin.
Alex?
My Instagram is Alex H. Bell.
And Anna, how can they get to us as a group?
You can email podcast@qi.com, or you can go to @nosuchthing on Twitter, or nosuchthingasafish on Instagram.
That's right. Or you can go to our website, nosuchthingasafish.com. All of the previous episodes are up there. There's also a link, the gateway to Club Fish, our secret members club, where we put a lot of bonus material up on. There's also a Discord that you get access to, so you can chat to all the other fish listeners. Otherwise, just come back here next week. We'll be back with another episode, and we'll see you then. Goodbye.